Okay, I'd like to talk about... I'd actually like to talk, which I have difficulty with doing right now, but it's just wear and tear. Nothing serious. I'd like to talk about Makat Choshech, the plague of the 10 plagues that has to do with darkness. So, in fact, we could divide up the plagues in a slightly different way. Now, in the Haggadah, there's a division, the Tzachad Ashbachav. But I think there's another division that is likely and more instructive. And that is the first seven Makot, Dam Tzvadei Kinyan, Odeh Bashir, Barad, Arbe, the first eight. First eight, including Arbe, which is the first Makah in the Parsha of Bo. The ninth plague stands on its own, Choshech. And the tenth plague, the plague of the firstborn, the destruction of the firstborn, is the plague that actually got Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. So I would say 8, 1 to 8, then 9 and 10. And what we're going to talk about tonight is 8, as 9, I'm sorry, is plague number 9. Now what does it say in the Chumash? You see the first source on the page? It says, Vayom Hashem Moshe Netei Yadchal HaShamayim V'yi Choshech Al Eretz Mitzrayim. Darkness. Now of course the thing that comes to mind is that what sort of a plague is it? In the other plagues, animals died, people died, the economy was upset. What does Choshech do, especially if it's going to come to an end? Then we also have this problem of Vayamesh Choshech. What does the word Vayamesh in the context of Choshech, if we understand what the word means, Limashesh, to touch something, Vayamesh Choshech, it was a darkness that you could touch, you could hold on to it. Well, does that make it more of a plague or less of a plague? I mean, what exactly was it that this plague was supposed to accomplish? Pasuk Bet, Vayet Moshe et Yado al Hashamayim. Moshe Rabbeinu did it. Vay Choshech Afeila. Choshech Afeila. Afeila and Choshech are. Binim Nedefot. Synonyms. They're synonyms. Okay, Choshech is darkness, Afeila. Maybe it's more darkness, but they mean the same thing as far as the simple reading is concerned. Bechol Eretz Mitzrayim Shloshet Yamim. So here, in fact, there's a time limit, an a priori time limit to this darkness. So we don't know what it does, and we don't know why it's so terrible, and we see that it has a time limit before Paro enters into the picture. The next pasuk. Lo ra'u ish et achiv, lo kamu ish mitachtav. They couldn't see each other. They didn't stand one for the other. I mean, it was really dark. You really couldn't see a thing. Shloshet yamim. That was 3 days. It's either the first 3 days or another 3 days. Nechol b'nei Yisrael ha'ya'or b'moshvotam. Now, this is instructive. There are other makot. There were other makot in Mitzrayim which affected the Egyptians and did not affect the Jews. But here it says, V'chobre Yisrael haya or b'moshvotam. Now what does that mean? What does it mean? Does it mean that in the places that the Jews lived, it was the same? Like there was light before, and there's light now. Like the old situation just continued. Is that what it means? Or does it mean a new light that overwhelms the darkness? I mean, it's not too clear, right? Not too clear. Vayikra paro Moshe vayomer lechu ivdu et Hashem haktzonchem v'kachem yutzakam tapchem yelech imachem. So, when exactly did Paro say this? This has something to do with the Choshech? It was usually Paro says, I believe you, I see God is strong, and the Bakan, you know, is terrible. Do something, he says to Moshe Rabbeinu. Well, what did he say here? Now, what was the cause of his of his change of heart? Was it the Makav Choshech, which doesn't seem to have inflicted any pain on anybody, except, as we'll see in a moment, as Rashi says, it inflicted a little pain on the Jews, but didn't seem to inflict much pain on the non-Jews, on the Egyptians. So why did Paro say leave? So now there are a few comments that Rashi makes that are important for us. Vayamesh. Rashi says, you see the second line of the Rashi? I'm sorry, the first line, Vayamesh Choshech. Yechshich aleihem Choshech yoter micheshkot shalayla. It was darker than it is at night. Now we are all like the products of general education, so we know all about physics, and we know that there's always light. I mean, it's not like this, not the darkness is not dark. It's just that there's light during the night. There's a moon that reflects light, and there are stars which have light. So you can sort of see at night, even if you don't see well, you can see. But here Rashi says, Yoter mecheshko shalayla. That's what Vayamesh Choshech means according to Rashi. It's darker than the darkness of night. And how could it be darker than the darkness of night? Only if all the sources of light disappeared. Right? There was no sun, there was no moon, there are no stars. It's all gone. Somebody turned that switch off and everything is off. So Rashi doesn't tell us that, but he wants us to understand that this darkness is real darkness. Real, honest to goodness darkness. Not darkness where you could sort of see what's going on. Right? A darkness that, you know, halachically has significance. Because in the morning, when the darkness turns to light, there's a time when you could say Kriyat Shema. Right? What does the Mishnah say? When you could recognize a person standing in front of you. When you could recognize his, whatever. Recognize what he looks like. Even though it's not really light yet. That's the, where are the sheets? Oh, you got a sheet? Very good. It's the first step. Okay, so Rashi says, Then Rashi talks about the Vayamesh, talks about the word. If you could skip down to Umedrash. In the Rashi, it's 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. The last word on the line, Medrash Agadah, Potero, Lishon Mimashesh Batzarayim. Somebody is feeling his way. So Rashi says, Kaful Mechupal. It was double and further double, double of double. That's how thick the darkness was. Ad Shayabo Mamash. Until there was Mamash. Do you feel, you felt it? I don't know exactly what Rashi means. I mean, like, it's a way of saying very, 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 very dark. But it doesn't mean that you had to put out your hand, you felt something there. It just was very dark. Okay, the next Rashi talks about Choshech Hafila Shloshek Yamim. And if you skip to the fifth line in that Rashi, the first line, word on the line is Lama. Now this is important. Lama hevi alehem Choshech. And here's Rashi. Rashi does not ask the crucial question. His question is, what is this? What is happening that we're supposed to understand? Because that's what we're supposed to do when we learn the Torah. We're supposed to understand something. What is the understanding that we're supposed to have about the reason for the Makkah of Choshech? So Rashi tells you. Rashi says, Lama Ivi Alehem Choshech, Shayu b'Yisrael b'oto ador v'sha'ev. Imagine that. At that time, there were people who were classified as Rishayim, Jews, who were classified as Rishayim, wicked people, bad people, people who are not going to do tshuva, people who are not going to fix themselves. Bad people. They were bad Jews. And because of that, they didn't want to, one of their qualities or characteristics was they didn't want to leave Mitzrayim with the rest of the, with the rest of the people. And they died during the 3 days of this darkness. And the darkness came to cover up the fact that they were being destroyed, killed, denied access to Olam Haba. You know, they were being punished. And so that's why darkness enveloped the country of Egypt, so that the Egyptians should not see what was happening to these terrible people. And then the Egyptians would come to this strange notion and say, oh, the Jews are also, it's nothing to do with us. The Jews are being punished just as we are being punished. So if the Jews are being punished, why should we let them go and leave Egypt? I mean, it seems like a virus, you know, like something just rat around, exploded, and it couldn't be dealt with. So Rashi, that's what Rashi says. V'od. You know, Rashi, when Rashi gives two explanations for something, it's always worthy of some thought. You know, like he gave an explanation, gave another explanation. So maybe the first explanation you might think is a little fantastic. You know, there's no mention of this any place in the Torah. We don't know anything about Rishaim and Mitzrayim who had to be destroyed in this manner of subterfuge. I mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have let them die natural deaths, the ones who had to die. Why did they have to have this complicated way of killing people? I mean, people who deserve to be killed. But it seems like pretty complicated. So along comes Rashi, he says, V'od. So V'od, you would think, means, well, in the previous interpretation, a little, like, fantastic. I'll give you another one. What's the other one? First, let's see the other, and then we'll see if we think it makes sense. V'od, shit, chipsu Yisrael, v'ruot kleihem. During the darkness, that enveloped Mitzrayim, the Jews, or the Yisraelim, I keep calling them Jews, but they're Yisraelim, right? The sons of Yisrael, not yet the possessors of the Torah, Yisraelim, they would go around to the Egyptian homes, imagine this, and they look around and see what they had. You know, did they have fancy dishes, silverware, gold ornaments, Ming Dynasty, whatever you call that?
Mounds.
Yeah. Do they have any of that stuff? So listen what Rashi says. V'och kisu Yisrael, v'ra'uet kleihem, okshe yatsu, v'ayusho alim mehen. When they left Mitzrayim, they would go to all these houses and to borrow the stuff and take it with them. V'ayusho alim mehen, v'ayom ein biyadeinu klum. So the Egyptians, but they're not that stupid. So they say, oh, we don't have anything like that. We don't have anything gold, we don't have silver, we don't have jewelry, we don't have anything like that. Omelo ani reitiv bebeitcha u'makom plonihu. What do you think about that? In other words, God promised Avram Avinu that when they leave the tribe, they're going to go with a lot of booty, and that the Egyptians are going to give it to them. They're not going to have to fight for it. They're just going to get it. So here we see, a second rationale for the Makkah of Choshech. The first rationale in Rashi was God had to kill a few Yisraelim, and it was more reasonable to do it in the darkness than in the light. And the Egyptians would never understand what happened. The second rationale is for the Makkah of Choshech, that it gave the Jews, the Yisraelim, an opportunity to look around the old Egyptian houses. But when they came to borrow stuff before leaving the tribe, the Egyptians said, we don't have anything valuable, right? We don't know anything about that. and the Yisraelim would say, well, I was just in your house, and I know exactly where it is. So give me that, you know, vase, because that's what we want. I mean, I think both of these interpretations, though, I don't question Rashi, nor Chazal that this is based on, seem to be also a reflection of the fact that there's such a clarity about what this Makkah of Choshech is supposed to be for, that even the fantastic interpretations that Rashi offers seem reasonable, like it could be. But they are truly fantastic. They're truly fantastic interpretations. Okay. That's what I wanted to show you about Rashi. Now the second commentary on these psukim is the Rashbam. First the Rashbam again explains the word Vayamesh, and then he explains Choshech Afela. You see Pasukov Bet in the Rashbam. Choshech ve'afela. Choshech gadol. Choshech ve'afela. A darkness which is afela. There's like different qualities of darkness. So that's how the Rashbam says it. It's more than darkness. The Rashi said it at length, and the Rashbam says it in a simpler way. Now if you look back at Pasukav Gimel, Lo ra'u ish et achiv. They didn't see each other. Below kamul ish mitachtav. Nobody got up mitachtav from under himself. I mean, however that works out. So Rashi says, Rashbam says mitachtav mi beito lefi pshuto, mi beito lefi pshuto. He didn't get up in his house. Shelo yadu heichan yelech. So Rashi says that the Rashbam says that lo kamu mitachtav, they didn't get up. It's not the punishment, but it's the implication of the punishment. They couldn't get up because they didn't know where to go. So whoever was sitting in his seat just stayed in the seat, which is also kind of remarkable when you think about it. That's what God wanted from the Egyptian, that they all sit in their seats for 3 days. Hard to understand. Now we're up to the Ramban. You see, under the Rashbam is the Ramban. Again, relating to that part of the pasuk, he says it's not true that the darkness that we are talking about is the darkness that would ensue if you turned off the sun. Just switched off. You could switch off the sun. No, that's not what you'd have. That's what the pasuk says. It was choshech, but with a quality, and that quality is called afela. We call that, I think, an adverb. Adverb choshech afela is an adjective. Adverb for verbs and adjectives for nouns, if I remember correctly. Klomar id av meod sheyarad min hashamayim. A very thick cloud of darkness that came down from heaven. Ki al kein amar teteit yadcha l'shamayim. That's why God instructed Moshe Rabbeinu to raise his arm to heaven. Lo rid misham chasecha gedolav nofelet aleihem. To bring down chasecha gedolav. In other words, according to the Ramban, nature, the sun, the moon, the stars, it all stayed the same. Nothing changed. The Ramban is the first one to relate in this sheet, to relate to this particular question. Did the world change? Or was it like a blanket that came down on Egypt? According to the Ramban, the world stayed the same. But Choshech Afela is the result of covering everything with a blanket. Right? V'ayta mechabe kol ner. This Chazal also say this, and the Ramban says, why couldn't they just light candles? Well, this darkness, which was like a cloud, which came down from heaven, which covered everything up, it also extinguished all the candles. The matches went out, the candles went out. That's what I'm called. Because ha'chafirot ha'amukot v'chol mekomot ha'choshech ha'atzum lo yitkayem ha'ner. The candle did not stand a chance. V'chein ha'ovrim b'harei choshech lo yamod lahem sham haner v'lo ha'esh klal. If you go into harei choshech, you go into caves, and you go into some places, there's just not enough air. You can't beat the darkness with a candle. V'alkein lo ra'u ish et achiv, and that's why they couldn't see each other. V'lo kamul ish mitachtom, they didn't get up. Otherwise, if they could have, they would have used candles, so that according to the Ramban, the darkness was of such a nature that the candles could not overwhelm it, and therefore there were 3 days of darkness. There were no candles, there was no fire, there was nothing that would light the way, because the darkness was able to deal with all of that. Now that we've looked at these sources, we'll take a minute off to say that there are many Mefarshim who have difficulty in understanding the physical nature of the Makat Choshech. Like, what happened in the world? What happened to the sun, to the moon, to the... One of the more interesting attempts at solving this problem, which I think is also in the Ksav Kabbalah, but it's certainly in the Torah Tmima, is that he said that what happened was that everybody got... He doesn't say these words, because he didn't know them, but today he would say these words, that the miracle was that everybody got non-see-through contact lenses, and therefore they couldn't see anything. Again, what does that mean? That the world remained the same. So if you lived outside of Egypt, there was day and there was night, and it was regular. But in Egypt, you had this thick blanket, something that prevented you to relate to the world as you usually did. And as I said, the Torah to me even says there was something that attached itself to your eyes and made it impossible for you to see. So lo ra'u ish et achav, even people that you know very well, and to recognize them takes very little light. You can recognize the way they walk, you can recognize the way they sit, but they couldn't, because they had this thing covering their eyes. Okay, now I would like to digress. Noach. Remember Noach? Noach also comes up every year. Noach walked out of the Teva, and Hashem offers Noach a deal. And the deal was, never again. Never again. This kind of punishment, this kind of flood, Hashem promises that it will not repeat itself. And that promise in the Torah is called a brit. And a brit is often translated by the word covenant. I always thought I knew what the word brit meant, and I was sure I didn't know what the word covenant meant. But that's the translation that is accepted. Brit, covenant. In order to validate this covenant, in order to strengthen it, like you say, that sounds silly. I mean, why would God have to strengthen a divine promise? Well, we know that in prophecy, it's not always true that whatever a prophet says is going to come true. Right? The simple example that we all know from Yom Kippurim is that Yonah said to the people in Nineveh, Od arba'im yom, 40 days passed, nothing happened. The people were not punished, because in spite of the fact that this statement was brought into the world by a prophet who was directed by a Kaddish Baruch Hu to tell this to the people in Nineveh, it didn't happen, because the people in Nineveh did tshuva. They repented. So that even a divine fiat is sometimes conditional. Well, it depends. And it may be that to say that there was a brit between Hashem and Noach about the future floods, well, that's only if the people acted out a somewhat reasonable way. I mean, you know, then the brit will be enforced. But if they really mess up and destroy the world with their actions, then maybe not. But there's another principle that we know from the Ramban at the beginning of Perek Yud Bet in the Breishit. The Ramban taught us that if the prophecy includes an action of some sort, a kind of designation, then it will come true in any event. Any event. Hananya ben Azur, it doesn't matter. That's the principle. So it seems that HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt that this covenant had to be strengthened in the eyes of Noach and the others. I mean, after all, we know what happened in the end of the story. They all did something wrong. Noach, his sons, they were not, you know, pure. And so Noach also knew this. So Noach may have said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is like, I make it up. What's the point of having a promise when we know that we're going to mess up and we're going to mess up so badly that we're going to have to be punished? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu strengthens the promise. How does he strengthen the promise? How does HaKadosh Baruch Hu strengthen the promise? Keshet ba'anan. Keshet is a rainbow. Right? Keshet is a rainbow. Ba'anan. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, whenever you see a keshet, you'll know that the covenant is reinforced. And even the Pasuk says, when I see a keshet ba'anan, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu kaviyachol himself sees the keshet ba'anan, then the promise will be reinstated. So that's the story. That's a story with some slight embellishments that I provide. The question is, at the end of the Torah, when Moshe Rabbeinu is about to die, and Moshe Rabbeinu presents a covenant to Bnei Yisrael that takes the place of the covenant at the end of Vayikra. I remember Vayikra, the end of Vayikra, they should have gone straight away into Eretz Yisrael, but they don't. They don't go to Eretz Yisrael, they're punished. There's Bamidbar, Nasaf, Baloscha, Shlach. Right, the Shlach is the parasha of the Meraglim. And the punishment for the Meraglim was 38 years in the desert. 38 more years in the desert. That was the punishment for the Meraglim. And so the covenant at the end of Vayikra was apparently disallowed. And a new covenant was written in the parasha of Ki Tavo in Devarim. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Bnei Yisrael, I want to establish witnesses for this covenant, to strengthen it, to make sure that it will always be, that you'll always be able to turn to these witnesses and they'll be able to give witness to the fact that the covenant with God and Bnei Yisrael exists. Who were the witnesses? Who are the witnesses, you remember?
Shemayim
Va'aretz. Shemayim Va'aretz. So the question that I'm asking is, why is it that with the covenant between Bnei Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the witnesses that witnessed the covenant and would be able to attest to it are Shemayim Va'aretz? But when it comes to Noach, the witness is the rainbow. The witness is the rainbow. You all know something about a rainbow. And you all know that the rainbow is like refracted light. In other words, if you took some light, a ray of light, and you bent it, and bending it would indicate that in the ray of light there are things that go at one of those. And some go slower, and some go faster. So the light would come out as a series of colors. Isn't that interesting? Series of colors. What they are is still in dispute from the time of Newton. And it's a suffix. This is like really for crossword puzzles, right? One of the colors is called indigo. Indigo, I don't know what indigo is, but the Yesh Omrim, that indigo is like dark blue. And there's a machlokes about whether Newton said the word indigo when he figured all this out, or he didn't. I can't really help you on this question, but I think it's important to remember that light has two amazing properties, amazing that we can't even imagine that light. First of all, the speed of light. It's really fast. I mean, it's not fast like anything we ever heard of or know about. It's so fast, you can't even imagine the fastness of it, of light. And the second thing about light, that even though it's white and pure, when you look at it, it's really made up of all kinds of lights, all kinds of different colored light. Right? That's an important thing to remember. Now, if you go back to the sheet, now we're back to our sheet. If we look at the first psukim in Bereishit, Bereishit bara Elokim et ha-shamayim ve'et ha-aretz. Okay, this pasuk could be like a heading. It doesn't seem to mean that first God created all of the heavens and the earth, because then the Torah goes on to tell us day one, day two, day three. So this is more like a heading, that the important word in the first pasuk is Bereishit. When did this all happen? Bereishit. Whatever that means. Elokim et ha-shamayim ve'et ha-aretz. Ve'aretz hayta tohu ve'vohu, v'choshu v'nei tohu. Ruach Elokim rachavet al pnei ha-mayim. I want to note the phrase choshech al pnei tohu. When was there choshech? When was there choshech al pnei tohu? When the world was tohu v'vohu. What does tohu v'vohu mean? What do those words tohu v'vohu mean? I have two answers. First answer is, I haven't got a clue. The second answer is, I'm going to tell you what it means. Tohu v'vohu means undifferentiated. In the creation, if you think back to the parasha, which, you know, just think back to Bereishit. We've all heard this. Some people are even sober enough to hear this on Rosh Hashanah, on Sukkot Torah. But I wouldn't hold you to that. In fact, the creation had different kinds of stages. There's a Yesh Ve'ayin stage, which is not reported exactly in the Torah. It's not reported. Even though the Ramban says, following others, that there was a creation Yesh Ve'ayin. Like the stuff that the world was created out of is called in Greek, and for the Ramban, Hiyuli. And that Hiyuli was created me'ayin, from nothing. Something from nothing. Everything else was the created something from yesh something. Yesh me'yesh. There's another factor in creation. I mean, that creation, by the way, is also divided up into the four verbs. Aleph, Ayin, Nola, Amira, Asiya, Yitzira, Bria. Those are the four verbs that I used in making things yesh miyesh. But besides that, there is differentiated creation. In other words, the world was covered entirely by water, and then God said, here's going to be the water, here'll be the dry land. That was creation. That was creation of the world that we know of. So tohu v'vohu is the time which precedes differentiation. That's tohu v'vohu, my opinion. You can quote me, but don't say that anybody else has to. So God created. The first there was tohu v'vohu, and there was choshech. Tohu v'vohu, there was choshech, and then the next pasuk says, "Vayom Elokim yehi or." And God said, let there be light, and there was light. Now this light of Pasuk Gimel, this light of Pasuk Gimel, is not the light that we know. Because the light that we know about comes from luminaries. I like that word also. Light bulbs. Light bulbs in the sky produce light. But not or. Or doesn't come from light bulbs. How do I know that the or doesn't come from the light bulbs? Light bulbs had not yet been created. There are no light bulbs. They're just light. They're just light. They don't solve this problem, Rashi. Well, let's read one more pasuk. Vayalu kibet or ki tov. Vayavdelu kibet or ben achoshev. You see? Or ki tov. The or is tov. It sounds like it was created. It was created. Vayavdelu kibet or ben achoshev. But no luminaries. All there is light and dark. The dark preceded the creation of the light, but the light produced or, produced this or, which was ketov, which was satisfying in creation. Now, if you look at the Rashi, look at the Rashi. Pasuk Dalet, you see the Rashi? We'll skip a little bit. This is Rashi. Now Rashi says, Rashi always said several times in Bereishit and Noach, the first two parashiyot of the Torah, Ani lo bati ela lepshuto shel mikra. I'm a pashtan. I want to tell you what it means, what the words mean. But in Bereishit, again and again, Rashi says, I can't do this, just tell you what the words mean. I have to tell you what the pasuk means. And in order to do that, I go to Chazal. And Chazal explained the pasuk, but I can't call their method exactly pshat in all of these times. So he says, Ad kan, anu tzrichim l'divrei agadah. Ra'ahu, she'eno kedai l'shtamesh bo rishayim, v'ibdilo l'tzadikim l'atid l'vo. What do you say about that? HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw that the light that was created, the light that was day, as opposed to the darkness which pre-existed the creation of the light, was not fit for the Rishaim. You know, Rishaim, it's a genetic disease. It's like a problem with your DNA. When you when you take Rasha and you put him into the light, the Ketov, he goes tilt. The whole thing doesn't work. And since the world is full of Rishayim, just being in a world with or Ketov couldn't work. Just couldn't work. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Rashi, quoting Chazal, says this, says, Shaydo Kedai Ustamesh Bo Rishayim Vidilat Tzadikim Latid Lavo, all of, sorry, if the Lord Tzadikim Latid Lavo, so the light that was created at the beginning to cover up the darkness, Choshal Pnei Tahom, which was appropriate only for Tzadikim because it was Ketov. Right, Moshe Rabbeinu? You have to think, remember, that light was Ketov. That light, Moshe Rabbeinu's light, later on, and here the light of the, became the light of the Tzadikim. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to take the light and to put it away in Olam Haba, so that the tzaddikim, only the tzaddikim will get that exalted position, they will be able to have pleasure from the light of day one, of day zero, Ketov, or Ketov, in Olam Haba. So he says, Ukvi pshuto. If you want to know what the pshat is, kach pershu ra'au kitov veina elo lachoshev shibishtamshi berbuvia. Since the R was kitov, and kitov is an expression of divine satisfaction, and it was not reasonable to think that that R kitov would last at the same place at the choshev. Al Pnei Tahom was, therefore, that they would be Mishamesh Be'er, that both at the same time, there would be Or Ketov, and there would be Choshech Al Pnei Tahom. He says, can't be. Kavale Tchumo Ba'yom, V'lazeh Tchumo Ba'laylo, so they were separated. That's the pshat. The pshat is that what we're talking about is a division, vayavdel. This is for day and this is for night. They can't be that we mixed up together. And the non-pshat, which Rashi prefers as an idea, even though it may not be so accommodating with the pasuk, Rashi says, the R was taken away. And when was light returned to the world? When the luminaries were created, the Shemesh and the Areach, they provided the light, the Shemesh, so that light became something that had a source. It came from somewhere. It wasn't just Or Kitov, but it came from someplace. So you have this idea that the Or was created twice, based on Rashi's position. That the Or was created twice, that the first time the Or was so powerful that it could not last with the Choshech, and it could not live, it, the Or, could not live in a world with Rishaim, could not live in a world with Rishaim. That's what Rashi says. Okay, now, if I had to explain Noach, remember the question we asked about Noach? Why was it that the promise, the covenant between God and Noach was buttressed by the Keshet Ba'anan? And the promise and the covenant, B'nai Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch at the end of the Torah, is buttressed by Eidut, by witness, Shamayim Va'aretz. What's the difference? Well, what is it that Hashem wanted to say? What is it that Hashem wanted to say to Noach? What Hashem wanted to say to Noach was, there's a certain acceptance in heaven that there are Rishaim in the world. And that the Rishaim will no longer determine the fate of the created world. In the time of Noach, it was the Rishaim. Wasn't that everybody was a Rasha? I mean, there was Noach and his family, but the Rishaim determined what the fate of that created world was. And the fate of that created world was, it can't continue. You can't continue with so many Rishaim, with so many people who don't adhere to any divine principles. That was the punishment of the Mabul. And the Mabul, as I said, that's Tohu Vavohu. The Mabul is takes us back to an undifferentiated creation. Because it's just, everything is covered by water. There's nothing else. That's what happened before the world was created. Now the waters have receded and it becomes possible to live in the world. Now there's got to be an agreement between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Noach that will induce people or encourage them to be more righteous than wicked. So Hashem says to Noach, look, we have a covenant. There'll never be another Mabul. What does Noach say? Noah says, well, I mean, this part I'm making up, right? Noah says, what difference does it make? People are bad people. They're going to do the wrong thing. The world will be destroyed again. So Kodesh Baruch says, no, it won't be destroyed again. And I'm going to prove to you that something major has changed. That the light that was created was taken out of the world. Remember that light, according to Rashi, was taken out of the world? Out of the world. I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will change and bring it back into the world. But of course, since I bring it back into the world, it means that the people I've created, that this world that has been created, can continue to exist. Because the first world that was created, the world of Adam and Chava, we said, they can't live with the light. Right? They can't live with that light because it's for the righteous. But I'm going to bring that light back. I read that light back, and I'm going to show you that you can live in a world with that kind of light. And even though some of you are not going to be so righteous, the world will continue because in general, it will be a fitting world. And God will not have to destroy it. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Noach, I cannot just change or undo what was done. If the light was taken out of the world, that light for Olam Haba, for the Tzadikim, I can't just put it back into the world. But what can I do? There's another light. There's light which is not light. It's not the light, it doesn't look like the light that was taken out of the world, but it is. And what is that light called? That light is called the rainbow. Because even though the rainbow is actually light, you don't see the light. It's as though a Kaddish Baruch was saying, I'm going to trick myself, so to speak. I said, I have to take the, according to Rashi, right? I said, I'll take the light out of the world because the world is not fit for this light. But to Noah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, well, maybe we'll ease up on it. We'll decide that the world does fit in with this world of light. But I can't just bring the light back after I said it can't be here. But I can bring it back as a rainbow. Because none of the colors of the rainbow are white light. And therefore, it's a kind of a subterfuge. It's sort of a trick that HaKadosh Baruch tells to Noah. Here's the light. It's there. Of course, it's not there all the time. It's not there every place. But it's there enough. I mean, everybody has seen a rainbow. Everybody knows that there are rainbows. Everybody knows that there will be rainbows in the future. So even though they pure light, Ha'or Ki Tov, was taken out of the world and put away for the tzaddikim, it can be brought back into the world from time to time. It can be brought back into the world from time to time. So that Noah was able to believe that something had really changed and that he was going to be the father of a world that could continue to exist and could have certain redeeming features that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would accept and allow the world to continue in its existence. And even though we know that there is often that often people in the world are not quite what they should be, nevertheless the world continues to exist. So we go back. I mean, here I have this this quote from the Pre-Tzaddik. Maybe we'll just read two lines. You see the fourth line of the Pre-Tzaddik, the second side of the sheet. V'zeh nikra'o d'haynu hakara sheyesh borei v'adonu kol b'riyoto. That's what light is. This the opening. You see, if you're in line one, it says Nahurei Yashreba, the light, filled by the light of Shabbos. The light makes things straight. It's in that, I don't know if everybody sings it, but Kina Tzudata, on Shabbos, you know, in the Zemirot of Shabbat. What? They sing it? Oh, great. So somebody does sing it, and but even if you don't sing it, it's in the Siddur. I mean, you can't avoid that. And he he's writing a commentary, he, the Pre-Tzaddik, in his commentary on Torah, also wrote a commentary on Shabbat. And every week he explains something about Shabbat. So here there's a connection that's made in this Atkinah Sudosa between Shabbat and Or, and light. So he explains what Or is. You see line 4, Zenikra Or. That's what light teaches you, that God is the master. It's a pasuk in Yeshayahu, Lomaru et Devaro, Itaba Medrash, Rabbah. He quotes various medrashim, al shelo savlu b'marut Dibrot Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Aleihem. So I'm in line 7, the third word. V'haynu shevechol amakot haya mida v'mida mepnei shazu b'Yisrael. Every makah also contained a punishment for Yisrael. The next line, v'makat chol shech amru atam shelo yir'u b'mafapalatam shel Yishei Yisrael shemeitu b'yimei afeilat. So what the pre-tzaddik is going to explain, even though he doesn't say what I said, but I feel that I can use the pre-tzaddik to defend what I said. Bnei Yisrael were on this march to Har Sinai. And at Har Sinai, the Gemara in Shabbat, Daf Pei Chet Amud Aleph says, that they were cleansed from the Chet of Adam HaRishon. That means they were on the level of Adam HaRishon before the Chet of the Eitz Hadat, before the sin of the tree of knowledge. So Bnei Yisrael at this time had to adhere to the standard of Or Ki Tov. They had to be the people for whom the Or Ki Tov could continue to exist and direct their lives. And that's why the pasuk says that all of the Jews, all of Bnei Yisrael, had Or B'moshvotam. Because they were part of the Or. They were the Or. Which Or? The Or Ki Tov. And the Choshech was something that applied to the Egyptians, certainly. And the Chiddush is that it also applied to Jews, to Rishaim, to those people who are not able to support the world. So in spite of the fact that Noah, there was a covenant with Noah that said the world will continue even if the people are not perfect, and even if they are categorized sometimes as Rishaim. But Am Yisrael ready or on the march to accept the Torah, could not be the nation that accepted the Torah through this great compromise. But they had to be the nation of light, the nation of Or B'moshvotayhem, so that the Makah of Choshech explains to me, or says that this is the beginning of Matan Torah, and therefore the people are only the people who are or liable to live with the Or Sheb B'moshvotam, the Or that was taken away and put into Olam Haba for the Tzadikim and brought back into the world as a rainbow in order to fortify the position of Noach. So that Or was the Or of the Tzadikim who would accept the Torah at Har Sinai. And the Choshech was the Choshech of the Rishaim. And it's true, there were Rishaim who were Egyptians, and there were Rishaim who were Jews. And the more significant thing is that the Rishaim who were Jews were killed, even though Noah was promised that the world would put up with Rishaim. They wouldn't be so bad. But in this particular case, since Bnei Yisrael had to be purified though they received the Torah, the Rishaim did not have a place. They didn't have a place in this concept or this kind of equation. Have a good Shabbos.